It's kind of crazy. I was one of these guys. I was doing this.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I was like, wow, has Oregon got money? They got money like Augusta got money. Like, oh, man.
Russ Dellinger.
That tricky Dan Lanning, genius move.
And SI's Pat Forty.
This rivalry game is always close, except for when Brent Venables is involved.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. What a day, what a day, what a night. Stole some of this from Ross's excellent column from Eugene, Oregon. There were 17 top 25 games yesterday, or 17 games featured top 25 teams. We had one upset by an unranked team, Arizona State over Utah. That was very exciting on Friday. Otherwise, we had four of them go to overtime. One was settled by 1 point, two of them were by 2 points, and one of them was by three. That's nine great games.
Yeah.
Nine. The rich will get richer. Not quite. Unbelievable day. It was like I had all the screens going. I'm watching LSU and Ole Miss. They're playing a tense game. Florida, Tennessee, tense. And then, of course, I got Ohio State, Oregon on. And then it goes to Colorado. That's a great game late. Like, there's just great games all day. SEC had 4 one-score games, 5 by 10 or fewer. 4 of the 7 Big Ten games were by 4 or fewer. ACC, 4 of their 6 were by 1-score games. It's just dramatic out there. And, you two were at the most dramatic of them all. You guys were at the most dramatic of them all. Oregon 32, Ohio State 31, literally last second play. Can you get the timeout? No need for me to talk about it watching on TV. Ross, thoughts on the game? What happened out there?
Well, first of all, this is only my second time in Autzen. I attended the Colorado game last year. It was a blowout, so this is my only time to be. This is my only time to be here for a really tight, close game, and it was just an incredible scene, Dan. Straight out of like just the picturesque day, right, of college football. It's like 65 degrees and sunny here. The leaves are changing. The Oregon Mountains in the backdrop. The press box view there is like just about as phenomenal as I've ever seen. And an incredible, incredibly loud 60,000 in that stadium, about as loud as a smaller stadium that I've ever heard. And it was just incredible. And back and forth, 7 lead changes in that game, 7 lead changes, back and forth, heavyweight fight, dog fight. All those words were used in the post-game news conference, and it really was. It was an incredibly exciting game. And then you look at who, number 2 and number 3, maybe the two most expensive rosters in football. Oregon's roster is a little overshadowed, but it's right up there NIL-wise, I think, if you talk to people in the NIL industry. Just an incredible, incredible game, and reminds you of all the failures off the field of college football. On the field remains just an incredible piece of content. Close games, like you said, tight games, but also the pageantry, the field stormings, just all around incredible. And to the end, you mentioned the end of that game, the game here in Eugene.
I'm going to tear up. I'm tearing up, but this is.
Hey, are you? Good. Yeah. Good. Good, good. That's my goal was to make Dan cry.
Thank you. It was beautiful.
It was a beautiful night.
True.
It was a beautiful night. Yeah. And it ended for Will Howard poorly, right? Mm. Just tucked the ball, decided to run instead of throwing it out of bounds or sliding earlier. I'm not sure what they were trying to do on the play, but they only had 6 seconds and he kind of played it like they had 10 seconds. I'll go back to one last thing here. Let Pat give his opinion. I'll go back to the couple of plays before that. You know, we talk a lot about Jeremiah Smith, obviously, and he's incredibly talented and had another great game in Eugene. But, man, as costly as an offensive pass interference you will ever see, they were inside the 30-yard line in field position, and an offensive pass interference call kind of back to back out. Ryan Day decided not to use a timeout in 5, 6, 7 seconds. It seemed like tick off the clock. And that was it. That kind of drove the nail in the coffin there.
Yeah, for the people that came into the game saying it doesn't really matter who wins, they're both going to be fine. Yeah, you should have been there. You should have seen it. You should have been part of it. You should have experienced it, or at least watched it on TV, because that game mattered a lot, simply because it was a phenomenal game. It will have playoff repercussions, maybe not negative repercussions for Ohio State, but very positive repercussions for Oregon, which does matter. And for the Oregon program as a whole, this was their finest home moment they've ever had. Arguably their finest moment they've ever had. Now that, you know, that gets a little bit, that's probably not true, because they beat Florida State to death in a playoff game in 2014. But this was their biggest chance to say, welcome to Autzen. Look at our place. Look how awesome it is. And look how good our team is. And all those things happen for Oregon. And Oregon has always been, you know, a striver. They've come a long way in 30 years, a long way, with Rich Brooks, Mike Bellotti, Chip Kelly, Mark Helfrich briefly, Crystal Ball, Taggart, but mostly now here at the end with Dan Lanning, who's an absolute superstar in the profession and is taking them to that next level. They don't have the trophy case of Ohio State. They don't have 100-plus years of tradition of Notre Dame and Michigan and some others. They don't have the 100,000 people at Bryant-Denny or the 100,000 people at Darrell K. Royal or what Georgia has, but boy, they've got a lot, and it's getting bigger and it's getting better. And so that's why this was a profound moment. And Mike DeCourcy, who's been around covering sports for 1,000 years, he tweeted that this has been the most enjoyable college football season of his lifetime. So don't say the regular season doesn't matter, because this was a great weekend for the regular season and a great night, day and night at Oregon.
All right, so we'll get more into this game, but obviously I think we're all in agreement. I didn't really turn this into a referendum, but yeah. And this is what I always felt people missed when they would say, oh, if this isn't an elimination game, then it doesn't matter. I thought those people missed or weren't. It's not that they don't know, but like they weren't factoring in all the other stuff that makes college football so important. It's not the NFL where it's just an elimination and nothing really happens if you're eliminated, or the win is only to survive. Because like you said, this was a monumental moment for the University of Oregon. It was a monumental moment for Eugene. It was a monumental moment for the program in recruiting, in fundraising, in attention. It was just fun. It was beautiful. Everything doesn't need to be a spreadsheet. And I always felt the people, it's like these Super League proposals. They're designed by TV executives who don't understand there's something else to the game than a TV rating. And don't say, oh, wait, no one will show up at a 3-5 football team. Maybe that's detrimental to the campus and the university as a whole, and all so many other things. And some people just like going to a game, even if no one's watching on TV. We don't really care. We're having fun with our college friends, or our kid that goes to the school, or our whatever. You're back on campus strolling around. It's like this game had everything, and all these games do. Florida, Tennessee mattered because it was Florida, Tennessee. And Tennessee might get knocked out of the playoff, and maybe it doesn't, but it just damn mattered inside Neyland. They were going crazy over this game. LSU Ole Miss was kind of a knockout game. Like, at virtually no point in the history of college football would Oregon and Ohio State have knocked somebody out of the national championship race. We've had lots of one-loss teams win the national championship. But this gives Oregon the opportunity to be, you know, potentially they can win. The bigger thing that hurts the regular season is the conference championship games, which they created, not the playoff.
Yeah. Right.
Get rid of the conference championship game. This playoff added drama across the board. People, I mean, no matter where you looked last night and yesterday, there's sold out stadiums. Everything's going crazy. And we're told, you know what I want? I want Ohio State to feel like their season's crushed. Like, really? This wasn't good enough for you? And you guess what? You're going to get more? It's just such a weird argument they held on to, and people still do. But it goes to where the people who, you talk about all the problems off the field, so many of them were done out of false fear of stuff that was never going to happen. And so they made moves and they did things because they were scared of this, this, and this. And you're like, man, that stuff's never going to happen. And now here's the playoff. It's finally here. And everyone's like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. We didn't lose anything. I mean, whatever small bit you lose, you gain exponentially other ways. And so it just was a, as you said, Pat, great day for college football across the board.
Oh, I think when we look at games and how we value them, I guess, from, we always look at it from our perspective, you know, from your own perspective. And oftentimes as a fan, the thing that comes to mind is the stakes. What are the stakes on this game? And we're kind of like all obsessed about that. But one thing we don't look at is put ourselves in the shoes of, you know, the players and the coaches who, it really doesn't matter what's at stake in a lot of ways for them. What's at stake is their reputation. You know, what's at stake is winning a game in their pride. And I think we sometimes, and me too, like I forget about that. And it's one of the things, you know, last night when we're on kind of the outside the stadium, Pat and I had to go about a 15-minute walk to the post game. And so we had to walk around the stadium because of all the field storming. But I did sneak into the tunnel a little bit briefly. And like you just saw the players and the reaction and all that. And it's like, yeah, like, you know, we forget about that. Every game means something to these guys. If they're 2-9, you know, we've seen a lot of 2-9 teams, you know, pull upsets. I mean, every game means something to these guys. So I don't know what the playoff would have to get for these games not to matter. I don't know how big it would have to get. And I hope it never gets big, very a whole lot bigger, right? But these games will always matter to the people who are involved in them.
Yeah, and to the people who pay for the tickets and watch at home, too. I mean, like to Dan's point, Florida, Tennessee, those fans were living and dying with every play. Certainly in the stadium, but at home watching as well. LSU, Ole Miss, neither of them may make the playoff. That game always matters, right? So the passion and the depth of feeling that goes with that, and LSU fans, they may end up 9-3 or something, not in the playoff. They'll be able to get on the message boards or go up to the Ole Miss friend they have, you know, and say, yeah, we got you. We got you this year. That stuff matters.
Big 12, the whole Big 12 race.
Oh, my God.
Iowa State's sitting there saying, hey, man, we're 6-0. BYU, we're 6-0. We can do this. We can do this. Colorado, yeah. Kansas State's game mattered for a potential playoff. It never would have. Pretty much everyone in the Big 12 would have been like, yeah, I don't know if we could possibly get in. Because we got to go 13-0 and maybe not. Right. And, yeah. You know,
yes.
Like at all, more games matter. And then we still get the playoff at the end. All right, back to the game.
Back to the game.
Because it was an unbelievable game.
Yeah.
Let's start with Oregon. Thoughts on what the Ducks did well. Then we will get to the meltdown in Columbus because there was, it doesn't mean anything. I think the pit in Ryan Day's stomach this morning. Tell him. Don't worry, yeah. Guys. The season's fine. It's just no. Ross, what did the Ducks do well?
Well, the thing that stood out to me about Oregon was obviously its quarterback, but specifically its ability to strike down the field and for him to I think. They had four passes, I think, of at least 30 yards. Ohio State hadn't given up one pass of 30 yards all year. and Oregon had four. And two or three of them were just placed perfectly by Dylan Gabriel. I mean, just beautiful passes down the field in the air, 20, 30, 40 yards, and were placed just perfectly. That just really stood out. I think he's taken, you know, his share of criticism at UCF and at Oklahoma, and even the first few games here. I think there was a little criticism, but man, he plays some beautiful deep balls, and he obviously has a set of receivers, Tez Johnson, Evan Stewart. I mean, Evan Stewart's like their third option at receiver, and he blew the game open last night. So they've got a crew of wideouts and a quarterback that can put it on a dime from a long, long way. And it was on the flip side, Ohio State secondary, and including some All-American type NFL draft pick guys, were burned.
That was a super impressive game from Oregon, I thought, on just about every level. They lost Jordan Birch, their star defensive end, leader in sacks, before on Thursday. Didn't matter. They got, I thought, a pretty bad call against them on what should have been an interception, but was a reception that helped Ohio State score its first touchdown. That didn't matter. They had Trayshon Holden, one of their better receivers, spit on an Ohio State player and get ejected, as he should have. Classless move. That didn't matter. Overcame that one. So they showed some real resilience, some toughness, ran the ball better than Ohio State did, which really impressed me. Jordan James, what a tough little cookie he is at running back for them, man. I mean, he got them tough yards that they needed. You mentioned Gabriel. He was fantastic. The receivers were fantastic. And Dan Lanning had his best night as a head coach. He dialed up one really bold maneuver, but even then, with the onside kick, which was extraordinarily well executed. Yeah. I mean, you plan to kick at somebody and you nail them and then you recover it. That's not easy. But he didn't do it in a rash situation. They had gotten a penalty, moved him up to midfield, and he said, if we miss the guy, then the ball rolls down the field. We don't lose field position. So that was a really smart play that stole a possession that was very important for them. And then I thought he refrained. You know, Dan's been go for it on fourth down. Don't kick field goals. He kicked field goals when he needed to, including the game winner, instead of going for a fourth and one at the goal line.
I was nervous.
You know, if he would have kept the field goal team on the sideline, I'd be like, you're going to do it again, Dan.
Yeah.
But he didn't. So
I was nervous.
And, you know, he's a complete package coach. He really is. I think he's a very good motivator. I think he's a very good preparation guy. And as Ross will attest, he came in afterwards and he couldn't wait really to get to the post-game recruiting. He mentioned a couple times, I got to go recruit. Like, you know, I'm sure they had 9, 10, 12, 15 great prospects there, maybe more. And he couldn't wait to go sell Oregon to them afterwards. So great night for Dan Lanning as well.
Couple thoughts on that. Jordan James, 23 carries, 115 and a touchdown. I was totally impressed with the depth of talent at Oregon. I kept thinking throughout the game, I took a couple notes. I was just like, there's too much Buckeye. Like, they just have so much going for them every time, you know, just another skill player, another play, someone steps up. And I just thought they would eventually win the game because they just had one too many weapons. And Oregon just kept coming back every time. They were like, I thought, okay, stop, Ohio State scores, this is over. Nope. A ton of heart along with all that talent, that depth of talent. I agree, that run game. The blast the ball, the onside kick at somebody is something I've been fascinated by for a long time, probably because I watch tons of youth soccer. And I once covered an Olympic, U.S. Women's National Team Olympic game. They played Canada in the 2012 Olympics, and there was a free kick, and they on purpose just kicked the ball. This woman on Canada had her hand free in the box and they just kicked it at it. And if you hit a soccer ball hard enough, and I mean, the pros can, you know, like a pro soccer player gets that thing going like 80 something miles an hour. You can't move fast enough, right? Well, it's a lot easier to obviously accuracy wise to do a soccer ball than a football. But if you can pull it off, it's impossible. You can't get out of the way.
Yeah.
And you, and then it's coming back. It's and then if you miss them, it's a squib.
Yeah.
So it's, I love that play. It's not easy to pull off, or they'd all be doing it. Although maybe Moore will try. So I thought that was a great play by Oregon. All right. Oh, I just thought just a tremendous night. Oh, also one other thing, you guys were there. They were doing, I saw the video. I watched the press conference after. They had the players sitting in these leather chairs with the Oregon logo stitch, and the it looked like Augusta National.
Yeah, I know it was. Yeah, the wood. The there was the wood paneling.
Yeah.
Yeah, it very much. It very much did look like the media center at Augusta National.
It's like, wow, has Oregon got money? Yeah. They got money like Augusta got money. Like,
their facility. Yeah, their facility is remarkable. Yeah. It's got the waterfall and all that stuff. It's incredible.
I mean, normally after a game, you got a guy sitting on like a, as they should. They just played their guts out. Oh, man, we smashed him. We crushed him. We killed him. And they haven't showered. They got, you know, the eye black is running. Oregon, they're sitting back like they're discussing the, you know, how was that flop shot on 15 that got you within 3 feet? You know? I thought we play, you know, I thought we killed them and like, dude, that chair's got to be like $500. What is that chair? I want that chair.
It's like a boardroom at the Ritz-Carlton in Aspen.
Good, you know, Lord,
it's got
Oregon.
Mountain ass.
They really thought everything when they're down to the post game leather embroidered, and they got the big O in the back. Incredible, incredible. All right, Ohio State. It's gone over really well, this loss. Buckeye fans, I don't know what to say. I've been defending Ryan Day. My favorite was Anthony Lima, who with Ken Carman has a great morning radio show up in Cleveland. Anthony's a Buckeye alum and fan, and his this was just great on the defense. His comment after on Twitter. As for the defense, Ohio State is once again paying players for no-show jobs. Problem is, those jobs include the actual football. Best NIL tweet I think I've ever seen. How much is this the defense? I hate making it about one play. Will Howard obviously should have gone. I look at this that last drive. It was a mess. You have a $9.5 million head coach, offensive coordinator. You went and took UCLA's head coach to be the offensive coordinator. Like, you got to have some execution at the end of the damn game. You've got Chip Kelly and Ryan Day running the offense, and it didn't look like they knew what the heck to do at the end of the game. It was terrible, terrible final drive.
Yeah, well, I thought their offense basically just devolved to Egbuka and Jeremiah Smith, save us, please. Save
not
a, us. Just
not
make
the worst
play.
Strategy, by the way.
No, it's
but,
not.
But, I mean, yeah, I get your point.
They are unbelievably good. Unbelievably good in slightly different ways. But, I mean, if there are not five better receivers, and it's a great receiver nation right now, but there are not five better than those two right now. They couldn't run the ball as effectively as they wanted to. Quinshon Judkins, high-dollar transfer, was not a factor. Their defensive ends, Tuamalo and Jack Sawyer, zero sack, combined for zero sacks. High dollar retainees there.
JT
they did not sack Dylan Gabriel
that,
at all.
JT got burnt on that Dylan Gabriel touchdown run, too.
He did, yes, yes. That was a beautiful play by Gabriel, but he got absolutely inhaled on the fake. Not enough physical domination, not enough execution, as you alluded to. And Will Howard is a good player, and he made some very good throws, no doubt about it. But he needed his receivers to be absolute superstars to get them down the field, and they were a lot of the time. I'm not sitting here terribly concerned about Ohio State, but we know what the assignment was coming into this year: win the national championship. They still can. This was a 1-point game on the road against a great team. But the expectation was we are so much better than everybody else. We bought the extra security of an advantage over everyone. And that advantage isn't really there right now, at least in that crunch time. Jim Knowles' defense gave up 30-plus again. They have not been able to stop elite teams when they needed to. And they will hear about this and wear this until November 2nd, at least, when they go to Penn State.
That's one of the things that stood out to me. Pat mentioned the running game, Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins. If you removed, I think Travion had almost 90 yards, but one of them was a 53-yarder that he ripped off. And if you remove that, you know, Ohio State ran for like 80 yards in the game in less than 4 yards a carry. And they had a little more trouble on the ground in winning the line of scrimmage than I expected. And I think when you look at what – that's probably a credit to Dan Lanning and what he's built at Oregon and how he's built Oregon following Mario Cristobal's same kind of, I think, way of building a team, which starts at the lines and the line of scrimmage. Oftentimes you look at, you know, Oregon's lines and they do remind you a little bit of the of SEC teams, especially the defensive front. And they proved that again. And they were without one of their best front players in this game, who got hurt at practice Thursday and might be out long term. So that was impressive from that standpoint to see Ohio State somewhat, you know, pushed around a little bit on the field. But Dan, back to your point about the late game. It was bizarre. It was bizarre how they kind of handled things late there. And there's, you know, Oregon was called for a illegal substitution, like a couple plays before the end of the game.
Second and to last
it actually
play.
Worked in their favor.
Yeah, it was a good. Yeah. It shouldn't have been off.
Yeah,
15. I was confused at how that whole play
shouldn't have been 15. What?
15 yards? It's only five.
I think it's nine. Just five. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They traded 5 seconds for 5 yards. Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. That's Oregon a loophole. Yeah. You should be able
and
to
it worked
get
out.
The
it,
five.
It did.
Set, get the time back.
It, And not always you're going to get called for it, too. So you're playing with 12 men if they don't call it. So, yeah, it was interesting. In fact, there's a little bit of buzz out there that Dan Lanning, maybe he did that on purpose. Tricky Dan Lanning, genius move.
I can tell you this. I ended up on the press box elevator with some of the Oregon coaches afterwards. And they were thrilled, but then they got on with the media, so they all like be quiet. No, be quiet. But one of them just kind of chuckled himself and said, 12 guys on the field. That was not on purpose. They were like mortified that it happened and they got away with it.
I thought, man, I was so excited for that.
I know.
Story.
I thought you were going to release a big secret about them. Yeah, doing
that. A lot of
getting, doing it on purpose.
Yeah, a lot of potential. Yeah.
Also, Dan, one, I wanted to give this stat because talking about Ohio State and Ryan Day and 2-6 now against AP top five teams. 2-6, Ryan Day at Ohio State.
I think he's 1-7 against college football playoff one. Yeah, look, until he wins the big one, is this just going to hang there? They obviously beat the teams they're supposed to beat, and they beat him soundly. Here's one other. I still think Ohio State is probably the best team in the country. I got nothing. I'm not worried about Ohio State at all. So I'm not like whatever. They lost. They could have won. It was a very great. It was a great game. These things happen. I'm not worried. I think Ohio State's going to be there in the end. But you sit there and say, "Oh, both these teams are in the playoff." Hold on now. Like you got to now. That Penn State game is really big in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, whenever that is. At Penn State, because this schedule doesn't have any meat on it. They got Nebraska, they're at Penn State, they have Purdue at Northwestern. Like they haven't beaten anybody yet. Iowa's their best victory. 40 points for the Air Hawkeyes. Just a quick shout out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
what in I the love world?
That.
Talk
Lester,
about a new era,
that.
Big 12. What is going on? And then they got Indiana and Michigan. We have no idea what Michigan's going to be. Like they could end up being 10-2, not in the conference championship game, with your best win being what, Indiana?
Yeah, like, but that might be a good win. We'll see.
It might be a good win, but like, that gets
what
real.
If Indiana and Iowa are both like 10-2. You got two good wins.
Okay, but like, it's not a guarantee. We've seen this when it was Alabama, Georgia, they'll both be in. Are we sure about that? Now, Alabama, they lose. They almost lose. Georgia's like playing patty cake with Mississippi State. Like, you can't just write these things in and be like, everyone's going to be 11-1 at the end of the year. It isn't the way it is anymore. And so Ohio State now, that Penn State game is monster. And then every other game, they've got to be able to walk that tightrope. And so do I think they'll be in the air in the end? Yes. I think they'll be in the national championship game still. I haven't really lost any faith in Ohio State, but watching the end of that game, a little bit. All right, quick break. We got Penn State, USC next. Just mentioned Penn State. Penn State looked beat at USC. They come back, tie the game three different times, finally win in an overtime. Huge, gutsy win for Nittany Lions to stay unbeaten and talk about kind of change the narrative of that team a little bit. Drew Aller was really good. I thought James Franklin called a brilliant game. He had one of the best fake plays I've ever seen. Tyler Warren, their tight end, snapped the ball. How about Tyler Warren? 17 receptions for 224 yards and a TD. He also was 1-for-1 throwing the ball for 9 yards. Tight end threw the ball. He also ran the ball one time for 4 yards, and he snapped the ball at center. He snapped the ball at center, was eligible, ran down the field, and made an incredible catch, because who the hell guards the center?
Yeah.
I thought James Franklin did a great job. And then after the game, they try to spike they want to plant the flag, the Penn State flag, and he stops them. And I like that because guess what? Great, great win. See you in November against Ohio State. Ain't nothing proven by Penn State. I loved that out of James Franklin. That told me something. I know that's kind of how he operates. Let's be a little bit more humble and all that. But that also tells me, like, we won, but we ain't done. And I like that a lot. Go ahead, Ross.
Well, yeah, maybe they could extend the runway now at the State College Airport.
No, that's what how you wanted. Get it done.
There you go. So who knows? You could bust an hour and then fly 5 hours and still win. Yeah, you mentioned it, Dan. Drew Aller ended up 30 of 43, almost 400 yards. And he did have a few interceptions, but his play is the difference in what you need. What's been, in a way, missing from Penn State in big, big games is a quarterback who can accumulate a lot of yards and win you games. And they needed him here to do it. And they've got that new offense with Andy Kotornicki at offensive coordinator. And we saw them have to lean on that offense to come back in this game. And, you know, usually with these Penn State teams, we see them lean on the defense, a running game, and all that stuff. This one, we got a good dose of what Penn State could do through the air. And the Tyler Warren stuff is incredible. I think he was one or two catches from tying the FBS tight end, like, single game record.
Did he broke it? I think he tied the FBS record, period, for catches.
Oh, he tied the FBS record, maybe. Yeah. Wow. 17. Wow. Yeah, 17 catches. Yeah. Just remarkable game. And on the flip side, of course, just demoralizing.
Good snap, too. It was a quality snap.
Yeah. About that. Yeah. Played incredible. Hey. Yeah. And good catch. He was guarded in the end zone. Yeah, he got a guy right there. The play really didn't work in a lot of ways, right? That nobody bit down, but he made his this remarkable basket catch around a defender.
They need to make a play though, and they made one. They were aggressive and called this fake, and it worked. Go ahead, Ben.
Oh, that guy. I don't know whether I've ever seen a tight end have as good a game, except for maybe Dalton Kincaid against USC 2 years ago. There might be a theme there. But he was completely unstoppable. He was Gronkowski. He also completed a pass for 9 yards and had a run for 4 yards. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are using him extremely creatively. This is the Kotelniki influence, I think, here is like, we've got this unbelievable weapon, this 6'6", 260-pound athlete. We're using him to do everything all over the place. So he's had a great season, but this was just an extreme level of performance there. That was incredible. The one thing I will say, and I'm sure Lincoln Riley will say it because he doesn't shy away from complaining about the officials, but they got some tough whistles there, tough flags, USC. They called a wham block on their tight end blocking Abdul Carter that called back like a 25-yard game that put them down in the red zone. That was a terrible call. That was just like, if that's not blocking, legal blocking, what are we even doing in football? And then there were two, I thought, probable pass interferences on their overtime possession, neither of which got called. And I thought the refs just kind of turtled a little bit at the end there, like, we're not calling anything. Which, so good defense by Penn State. Make them call it, and they didn't. So USC will come away with complaints and all that, but the bottom line is they've lost three times. And they had a lead. They were playing extremely well, and they couldn't hold it. They could not stop Penn State, and that's credit to Penn State, but also, once again, Lincoln Riley with a defense that couldn't shut the door.
1-3, fading late in games, lots of travel, not getting the calls. Like, yeah, welcome to the Big Ten. I swear, you know, USC, Pac-12, still looking for an eighth member here.
Yeah, no kidding.
Take you back. Like,
enjoy the revenue.
USC's like the guy. He has a nice girlfriend, breaks up with her, hits the singles bar, 4 straight weekends. He's home at 12:30 playing video games by himself. Maybe it wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't so bad. It's a little rough out there. It's cold. It's cold. And winter ain't even hit yet. It's coming. Yeah. Try have a nice trip to Maryland next week. Probably win, but good God. Back and forth. Anyway, that's for that. All right, let's get to some of these SEC games. Anyone got a comment on Red River other than two programs going in different directions right there? Pat?
Well, that, yes. And that's a good place to start. Yeah. Texas, again, complete program. I mean, you could put Oregon 1, you could put Texas 1. I don't think it matters at this point. They both look fantastic. They look like the best teams. And that was Texas just taking care of business. On the other side, as I noted during the Race for the Case pod, this rivalry game is always close, except for when Brent Venables is involved. He's now been responsible for 2 absolute tire fire performances in the Cotton Bowl against Texas, 49-0 and 34-3. Their offense is horrible. They didn't, you know, they benched Jackson Arnold. First of all, they kind of waved goodbye to Dylan Gabriel. He might have wanted to leave, but they had Dylan Gabriel like, nah, it's okay. We got Jackson Arnold. Well, then they gave up on Jackson Arnold a couple games ago in the middle of the Tennessee game and haven't gone back to him. And Michael Hawkins may end up being a very good player, but the SEC and Oklahoma football is not about maybe you'll be good in a couple years. It's show up and play now. And he was totally overwhelmed. I mean, the play that completely encapsulated his day was they're losing by 24 points. It's like 27-3, and there's, I don't know, midway through the fourth quarter or something, and it's a 4th-and-3, and he's scrambling, and he's just like, oh, just throws the ball out of bounds. It's like, dude, it's 4th down. It's okay if you throw an interception. Try to actually make the 1st down and go down the field and score. It's the point of the game. And they are so overwhelmed at quarterback right now. And Brent Venables is walking on some thin ice.
Yeah. Yeah.
That contract extension.
You got that big contract extension in the summer. Ooh, yeah.
Why? Why? I don't know.
Why?
I don't know.
Well, there's a lot of people trying to hire him.
Banging down his door in the middle of May or something. Yeah. I think I was doing some stats on this game in Oklahoma had 1 drive of more than 19 yards. It was just remarkable. Texas, Texas is really good. And they're great at the line of scrimmage. And even though Quinn Ewers was a little rusty early on, I think he ended up getting back into it now. And it was a great game for Texas to kind of any kind of get back going for him, for Quinn Ewers to get back on before this big tilt in Austin against against Georgia.
The other two, quickly, Tennessee survives Florida. Really weird game. Graham Mertz, I don't know. I think I know what happened to him, but I'm not going to say. Just injured, not just backpedaling after a beautiful touchdown pass. I don't know how many years Graham Mertz has played, but that's his last pass in college football. That's obviously not how he wanted to go out, but what a pass. But they come back and survive Florida. What would have been a crippling loss to the Vols if they go Arkansas and then Florida. But they get Alabama coming next week. Alabama survives a wild one against South Carolina. Again, it's the Kalen DeBoer experience. You're going to get wild end of games. And Bama fans are used to boring, man. Yeah, it's just like... Yeah, right. It's like it was like when they tried to install the spread at Michigan, and they were all the old alums like, "What are we doing? Like, what are we, you know, like it's just too much culture shock here." But they did win; they survived. And then LSU and Ole Miss. LSU's only lead of the game is in overtime when they get a touchdown. Ole Miss got pushed back, had to hit a very long clutch field goal in overtime. Ole Miss should have won that game. They lose that. That is a huge blow for Lane. Lane Kiffin looked beside himself after the game. He was I watched his video, and he looked like a guy. He just said, like, this one's going to stick with you forever. I don't know where the Rebel program is at this point with two losses in the middle of. But that game had this massive shift of, like, someone's going to be despondent, and it was Ole Miss. Great win for the Rebels. Any of those games, guys, comment on?
The Alabama-South Carolina game. Good glory. The inability of Alabama to bounce back in a dominating way from the Vanderbilt game, I think, has really unnerved a lot of their fans. You can maybe have one bad game at Alabama. You cannot have two, and you can't have two in a row. And this looked very bad for quite a while. They jumped up 14-0, and you're like, okay, they got it back together. And then it all started to unravel, and you could tell that the Alabama fans were like, oh my, what has happened to us? As you said, Dan, this culture shift that they knew was coming, but you're still not prepared for it until you're in the middle of it. Caitlin Collins, the CNN anchor, she tweeted, she's an Alabama alum and fan. She said, this election I can handle. This Alabama season, not so much. Oh, that I'm sure there are a lot of Alabama fans that agree with her.
Florida, I mean, I would talk a little bit about Florida and Ole Miss, both that led their games pretty much most of the way and found a way in the end to blow it. Just crushing for the Rebels. Been a lot of talk, obviously, about their investment in NIL and the resources given to Lane Kiffin, and here they sit at 5-2. Having lost at LSU and against Kentucky and virtually out of the playoff. You don't want to completely say that at 10-2, you could run the table, or 11-2 if you win the SEC championship game. So there's still some light there. But given what they've got coming up, including a game against Georgia down the road here, it is tough to see this ending in a playoff trip. It's just so devastating. Loss there. You just don't go into Tiger Stadium at night. I think 15 straight home night games LSU has won. It is the toughest place in football. And then Florida, Billy Napier and the Gators, they had a chance here to win a game that, potentially propels them forward. And in the end, and partly they lost their starting quarterback, didn't help, but, they blew it. And I just don't understand why they didn't go for two. I don't understand it. And you got Lagway, a freshman quarterback, who completed a 3rd-and-18 touchdown pass, to get within 1 point, and you got a chance to win the game with one play. You're on the road. Like, when you hear about going for two, you know, you hear all the metrics behind it. You know, you're on the road. You don't have your starting quarterback, right? You're just the momentum has flipped completely to the other team. You got one play to win the game. I was shocked they didn't go for two.
Yeah, it was bad. DJ Lag, I watched a lot of that game, and Lagway, he made that one great pass, but he just was overwhelmed the moment he came in the game. The entire game flipped when Mertz went out.
Yeah.
Tennessee just started rolling, and the crowd's going, and they're making plays on offense and defense. But the Gator defense kept standing up, and you got to the one. It was the exact opposite of, like, I was like, okay, Dan Lanning's down one. He might go for this. Like, don't do this. Kick the field goal. I know it's probably, I don't know, it's terrifying, but take the lead. This one, I was like, gosh, you got one play. Roll this kid out. He's so athletic. Do something. But Tennessee's got too much. And I don't know how they factor in. This is my problem with football analytics. Well, the two-point conversion will be that. Like, what is it when you got a freshman that hasn't shown anything much, and there's 102,000 people screaming at you, and like, how does that get into the metric, right? Like, I would always say, like, yeah, what the metric on fourth and one when you have Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, pretty damn high, but you can't equate it when you don't have those guys. And so that was a big, I thought Napier had a chance to win the game, didn't, and there were still 30 something seconds left. Tennessee could come down and still, but it just, to me, was like, this is your shot. Try to win it. I don't know how the hell you're getting out of here with a victory. If you lose, you lose. But Lagway at 2-3 yards. Yeah, I like him there. Lagway with 25 to go and everyone hollering at him. Or what do you start? 25 or 35?
25.
Yeah. 25 yards. Didn't like it.
Yeah, I watched as much of that as I could on my laptop while we were covering the game we were covering, because I was just riveted. I just thought it was very interesting that Florida played as well as they did and that Tennessee looked as vulnerable as they did. And I was sitting there thinking, you know, a month ago, people weren't sure Napier should ever coach another game, and they thought maybe Tennessee was the best team in the country. And then for a lot of the night in Knoxville, Florida was the better team. And then they kept screwing up in the red zone. Mertz fumbled at the one. They ran a terrible play on a fourth and one and like the 18. They missed field goals. I mean, they screwed up, but they had chances to win. But especially, yes, you're probably not as good a team and you're on the road and you've got a chance to steal one with a quarterback who made one good play and about six bad ones. Roll the dice and try to win it.
Yeah. All right. We'll be back with Say Something Nice and Small Sample Heisman. All right, small sample Heisman time. This is too much to fit into this. There's so much happening this weekend. Two things. Shoulder injury. This is the real Heisman race to Travis Hunter. So he's been the big fear. How long can you play 120 snaps a game? He was not there at the end of an absolutely epic Colorado-Kansas State game that was a ton of fun to play. So we don't know exactly how that's going to, of course, play out. Your requisite Ashton Jeanty bit, because we don't need Boise State fans going, why not? Boise let Hawaii hang around until they just went to Jeanty. 31 carries, 217, third game this season, he clipped 200 yards, and Boise went 28-7. Other little note on Boise. Feeling pretty good about Oregon winning that game because this Boise's only loss. And Boise State will be very, very tricky to leave out. If they win the Mountain West, can they get that four? Like, they've got the group of five, I think, advantage. They could even get into the four seed, maybe. We'll see. The more Oregon wins, the better it is for Boise. But anyway, we hand out a weekly Heisman, small sample Heisman. And who is your small sample Heisman, Pat?
Oh, I am going with Captain America. I've decided I'm going to call him that. The quarterback of the Army Cadets, Bryson Daly, tore up UAB. You want to talk about a team that needs to change their coach? It's UAB, by the way. Trent Dilfer, absolutely not getting it done. But Army ragdolled them to go 6-0. Daly, QB, ran for 136 yards and four touchdowns, threw for 102 and a touchdown. Only 19 combined rushes and passes, 12.5 yards per play. He's been phenomenal all season, and this might have been his best. He has the look of a West Texas hard ass. He's listed 6 foot. He's from Abernathy, Texas, which is north of Lubbock, so it's out there. Not far from Cotton Center, Texas. Not far from New Deal, Texas. And he's leading that absolutely awesome option offense of Army to a dominant 6-0 start. They really haven't played anybody yet, but so what? They're fantastic. I hope they keep winning. And I love Bryson Daly.
Is Cotton Center supposed to be some landmark? Like we're like six hours north of Dallas. I understand what that might be.
I mean, it's, you know, I'm just saying it's out there. If you're if your neighboring towns are Cotton Center and New Deal, you're out New there. Deal.
No one took it. No one took
Spain,
the New Deal.
Texas also not
yeah,
far
yeah,
away.
It's yeah, tumbleweed out there, man. It is. You're a hard ass. All right. Army's won 3 Heisman, so maybe this is their 4th. Get the small sample. Yeah. Ross, small sample Heisman?
Yeah, and it would be quite something if, yeah, Army finishes. Army or Navy or both of them finishes undefeated. We talked about that before. What wrench that may throw into the selection, CFP selection committee would be really interesting. I got a quarterback of an undefeated team as well as my small. From my small sample, Rocco Beck of Iowa State, the Cyclones, almost said Hawkeyes, the Cyclones, undefeated, 6-0 for only like the second time, I believe, in school history. And Rocco, son of Anthony Beck, the former NFL tight end, continues to get it done. Hard-nosed kind of player. They won at West Virginia this past week. And they are kind of them and BYU on 2 undefeated Big 12 teams coming down the race here. And what could be a wild one there in the Big 12, but Rocco, solid player, been leading that team. That's kind of been overshadowed a little bit, college football this year.
Yeah. Big 12 is just so good. And how about just quick shout out to Arizona State 5-1. I mean, they were terrible.
Yeah. Oh.
In the past. I mean, Kenny Dillingham, is he in a mosh pit? Does he get the Heisman? He got swallowed up by the crowd,
yeah.
Which happens at Arizona State parties. Send your kid off to Arizona State. He's looking to be an engineer. He comes home Gronk. He's Gronk. You don't know what happened. It's Arizona State, baby. They're rolling. And it could give them small sample, but that don't look out for them. BYU, this race is not what we were predicting. BYU, Arizona State, Iowa State. But that's what's beautiful about it. Although K-State looked really good also. I'm just couldn't be more excited. One little thing about former NFL players, weird note. We'll make it the Diag Partner stat of the day. Mm. Diag Partners, custom staffing solution. UTSA played Rice, the 2 quarterbacks, Kurt Warner's son and Josh McCown's son. EJ versus Owen. Want to feel old? Okay. All right. My small sample Heisman goes to Desmond Reed. Scat back, maybe 5'6", 170 from Pitt. Panthers are 6-0. Another program supposed to be just decimated by everything that's happened in modern football. No, Panthers are doing great. They beat Cal 17-15. Reed had 2 touchdowns, including a 72-yarder. Caught a pass, had 120 yards total, caught a pass. He is a very, very electrifying player, and they needed him on Saturday at Pitt. It's not easy to score against Cal, and they got it done. But congrats to the Panthers. It's kind of on behalf of your whole team. 6-0, baby. Panthers are rolling, and we will see where this ends up. But they are not to be trifled with in the ACC. All right, we said some mean things. Can we say something nice? Anyone got a nice story here?
I do.
Well, you stole my thunder.
Oh,
Kenny Pitt? Dillingham.
Oh, Kenny
yeah,
Dillingham.
Kenny Dillingham. Have Arizona State 5-1. And his post-game interview, of course, he's a son of Phoenix And, you know, they got swallowed up into that Phoenix crowd as he yelled on national TV, "This was me. I was one of them." And then they ate him alive, never to be seen again. But yeah, incredible what he's done there. Visited him over the summer. And it's very remarkable what's happened there. When I visited him, I don't think the notice of allegations had dropped yet. They were on the edge of their seat about that. And what the transgressions of Herm Edwards and his staff, and they were in flux in the athletic director position too. And I remember asking him, "Man, there's a lot of like going on here. Bad." And he's like, "Yep, I know." But here they are, 5-1.
Doesn't really worry about it.
I think he's an absolute rising star in the profession. He's very young, but he seems to really have the ability to put together a program quickly. So we're on to saying something ninth, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Okay. You touched on it very briefly there, Dan. I'm going to say something nice about the Rice Owls, and specifically receiver Matt Sykes. And I will give a shout out to Chuck Poole, their excellent SID, who did tip me off to this, but it's a great little deal, man. Matt Sykes checked into the hospital on Monday. Ailment, hadn't been really disclosed what it was, but he was in the ER, stayed in the hospital through Wednesday. Wasn't expected to play. Comes in, 7 catches for 85 yards, including the game winner with 4 seconds left as they avoided snatching victory from the jaws of defeat. Or it's the other way around. Anyway, they won the game, beat UTSA, only their second win for Rice, only their first one over an FBS opponent. So Matt Sykes dragging himself out of the hospital, putting himself on the field, catching the game winner. Pretty cool.
All right. I'm going to say something nice about a team that got a lot nice said about them last week, but this was a new week. And if you know anything about the history of Vanderbilt, they rarely do great things in football. Pretty good, like law school and stuff, but you know, those things, we don't care about that. but when they do something good in football, they usually seemingly spend the rest of the time down on Broadway getting hammered for a week and come back and totally fall apart. And that's it. Never to be heard from again. Not this time. 2 touchdowns from Diego. It beat Kentucky 2013. It was not a great game. It was a ugly game, but they won with a lot of grit. And look, anytime Vanderbilt's doing anything, they're getting it done. They're 4-2 through 6 games, and they got a really good chance of making a bowl for the first time in 2018. And to me, this is sort of a sign of a program. Yeah, you can have your big day against Alabama, but can you maintain something off of that and beating Kentucky at the same time? Not good for Kentucky. Not good for Kentucky. This season had a lot of potential, so let's turn this into a negative. And it ain't going so well for the CATS, cats. But I'll say something nice about Vandy. I thought that's they're on the rise, and they're showing a little bit of resilience to them. All right, that is our show. We'll be back Tuesday to discuss more. Another big week coming up, and we'll get to it. We will appreciate everybody listening. Share us on social media. We will talk to you later.